Joining us now, he is the state representative from the 9th District. That's East Hartford, Manchester. Representative Jason Rojas. Jason, welcome to CT on the Hill.
Good morning, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
Now, you're co-chair of the Finance, Revenue, and Bonding Committee. You're also on the Planning and Development Committee, so obviously you have a full plate. But let's start with the governor's budget address on Wednesday. From your perspective, how did you view it? And from your district's perspective, essentially, how did you view it?
Yeah, you know, I viewed it as a budget that the governor is trying to challenge the legislature to think about things in a structural way. I think from year to year, we talk about relief in certain ways, and relief only provides you relief on a yearly basis. What I think the governor is trying to do is change some things on a structural level to try to reflect the new realities of Connecticut state economy and state government. East Hartford and Manchester both do relatively well under this new proposal because many of the changes that he's made in kind of the funding formulas for town aid, both on the education side and on the government side, take into account growing levels of poverty in communities like East Hartford and Manchester. So those changes that he's proposed actually result in additional state aid going to places like East Hartford and Manchester, which have been struggling with growing poverty for the last 10 to 20 years.
Yeah, let's start there, Jason. Let's start with this growing poverty. Explain it to our audience in East Hartford and Manchester, what it's like in those pockets of poverty in that district.
Yeah, you know, what you have are hardworking people, right? These are people who continue to get up every morning and go to work. But they just, the new economy resulted in a lot of service jobs coming into the state. And these are folks who are working two and three jobs, not unlike my own dad. You know, my dad has two jobs. He works during the day at a box company in Hartford. He's a janitor at night at UTC. He's been doing it for all 40 years of my life. Worked hard, but just doesn't make the kind of money that allows you to live a higher quality of life in a place that's as expensive as Connecticut. So what you have are kids who, through no fault of their own, are under-resourced, are underprepared when they enter school, and that results in a need for a lot more support in the classroom and in our school districts. And our ECS formula, as the judge found last fall, was just not meeting the needs of kids who have needs where they're at.
It seems that we're getting this dichotomy because some of the towns, particularly the so-called richer towns, are upset. They believe they're being shortchanged under this budget. So how do we bring about some sort of compatibility within the state legislature, Jason?
Yeah, no, you know, but I think no one should be vilifying wealthy towns, and I'm not suggesting you're doing that, but so often the conversation ends up in us against them. And I really hope it doesn't end up being an urban versus suburban versus rural, because Connecticut is such a small state. As the governor indicated on Wednesday, we're all in this together. I think it's a matter of sitting down with cooler heads after folks have had a minute to digest the budget and recognizing this is just step one in this process. The budget that was presented on Wednesday is not the budget that's going to be voted on sometime before June and the end of session. So I think there's a lot of reasonable people at the legislature. Despite what people believe out there and popular opinion, Republicans and Democrats actually get along really, really well. We work together. We're able to compromise. And I think so long as we go in respecting each other, I think we can work through what will be very difficult challenges, because we are asking some of our wealthier communities to sacrifice a little bit, recognizing that they have the capacity to fund some of the things at the local level on their own. And that's all that's being suggested. We don't want the wealthy communities to pick up the dime of every other community. What we're saying is that they have, and what the governor has said, is that they have the capacity locally to deal with a lot of things that they need, that are priorities to them locally. And he's just trying to shift those costs a little bit more in recognition of that.
Well, you know, that's going to be the challenge, because you've got, for example, the first selectman of Greenwich, Jason. He's out there yesterday saying that Greenwich obviously is going to have to pony up money in an area where before it got money. And he said the governor ought to come to visit our taxpayers, that 15% of the population in Greenwich, a so-called wealthy community, 15% of that population has children either getting fully funded for the school lunch program or partially funded by the school lunch program.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think the governor would take any chief elected official's invitation to come down and talk about the finances in Greenwich. Again, that's another situation, and that's important recognition. There are pockets of poverty in every community. Does Greenwich have the capacity to address it, right? I mean, you mentioned it's 15%, where 70% of the children in East Hartford are on free reduced lunch. In Hartford, it's 100% And I think everybody's well aware of the fiscal challenges that places like Hartford and East Hartford face. So I think it's a matter of just educating each other, because I don't quite know that everybody knows those realities, right? Most people don't know that the mill rate in Hartford is 74. I don't know what the mill rate in Greenwich is, but I'm guessing it's in the teens, maybe even in the single digits. So I think it's a matter of just, again, respecting each other and educating each other about the realities of our state.
The of course, the Hartford people might tell you that when it comes to that 74 mill rate, as far as the homeowners in Hartford, their property is assessed at a much lower percentage. But that's another topic altogether.
Absolutely.
But what you did say is very striking to me. What you're saying is that in East Hartford, 70% of the students, and in Hartford, 100% of the students are on a full or partial school lunch program. Is that right?
That's correct.
Wow, that is staggering. Absolutely staggering.
It is. And I think it speaks to how segregated we are as a state, how racially and economically isolated we are as a state from each other, which I think hurts everybody regardless of where you live. When you have those kind of realities in our cities and in our inner ring suburbs throughout the state, just 10 miles from the direct opposite of those realities, I think that's a moral question I think all of us should be exploring.
Now, you're going to get, obviously, some pushback. That's the way all these budgets work. And as you said, what we're going to see is going to probably be different than what the governor mentioned. But you're getting pushback from the hospitals as far as the ability of municipalities to tax hospitals. What are you hearing about that?
Yeah, no, I can understand the concern that the hospitals have. I mean, I think the governor did include a mechanism to try to cover the cost of them paying a property tax. I think rightfully so. The hospitals are a little bit skeptical about that proposal because they're just not sure that we're going to live up to our end of the bargain. And I hear them on that concern. It happened with the hospital tax 5 years ago. We put that in place. We told them we'd get additional revenue from the federal government and that we would pass that along to the hospitals. We didn't do that. Here we are proposing again, allowing towns to charge a property tax on their real property, and we're going to reimburse it for it. Are we going to do that? I don't know. And then the other big unknown is we're not quite sure what the Trump administration is going to do with the Affordable Care Act, or if whether Congress is going to block grant Medicaid, which would result in a reduction in funding to places like Connecticut and Allstate. So I understand their skepticism, but again, you know, we're going to have time to talk these things out and come up with a compromise.
Now, as you know, Mayor Luke Bronin has been going around talking about some sort of regionalized concept. So that said, from where you sit, is Hartford's problem East Hartford's problem?
Yeah, absolutely. 4,000 or 5,000 residents who live in East Hartford get their paycheck in Hartford. I'm one of them. So the health of the city, and to the extent that companies and corporations want to stay here in the city based on the fiscal health of the city, that directly impacts people all over the region, because 100,000 people come into the city every day to go to work and collect a paycheck and go back and pay property taxes in East Hartford, in Glastonbury, in South Windsor. So the health of Hartford is certainly should be a concern to everybody in the region, given that it is really the economic hub of the region.
What do you hear from your constituents in that particular area?
On Hartford? On the Hartford question?
Yep.
You know, I think for most folks, it's still kind of difficult to understand. No formal proposal has been put out there. So it's hard to react to something that's still really in a concept conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think like anybody in any town in Connecticut, most folks really put a premium on local control and on home rule. And they want to make sure that the resources that they're paying to East Hartford's town government are providing services in East Hartford town government. I think we need to change that conversation a little bit and be more open to collaboration, because there are a lot of services that could be done on a regional basis, and we might be able to realize some savings if we were to do that.
Now, you're co-chair of a very prominent committee in the legislature, the Finance, Revenue, and Bonding Committee. So explain to our audience what that means, what that committee's all about.
Yeah, you know, so we are the committee that sets tax policy for the state. We're the other half of the big money committee, so appropriations determines how we're going to spend money. The Finance, Revenue, and Bonding Committee determines how we're going to raise that revenue to fund the spending side of the budget. And it's not just about how much money can we raise for spending. It's about what kind of tax policy is going to encourage growth here, what kind of tax policy is going to make businesses and corporations want to stay here and invest here. And then, of course, we deal with the bonding side of it, too. So we set the agenda for what we're going to borrow money for capital projects, with the vast majority of which is school construction. So the state borrows money so that local districts can construct schools. That's another shared kind of cost that we have, but most of the cost is on the state side of it.
I would imagine that you're going to look individually at some of or all of what the governor has proposed in the budget in relation to bonding. Is that correct?
Absolutely. We have to. You know, there's been a gigantic increase in bonding under the governor's tenure, and I think he's done that because he's been trying to take advantage of the really, really low interest rate, so we're borrowing money very cheap. But the reality is we have to pay that back at some time. So while there's been a significant increase over the last 5 years, I think we're reaching a point where there is a bond cap, and we have to stay under that bond cap. And we have to be more conscious about the long term, because we're making these decisions now, and we're going to leave paying for it to another generation of leaders here in Connecticut. So we'll certainly be reviewing all of those. But the vast majority of the bonding for the last 5-6 years has been around education and school construction and then economic development.
And with that, a final question, because falling under bonding projects would be the Excel Center. Do you have a position on that?
You know, I don't, and I don't right now, only because I have a responsibility to sit down across the table and negotiate that, so I'm not going to show all my cards just yet, but I can tell you I've had a number of colleagues and I've had some constituents contact me expressing a great deal of skepticism about investing that kind of money in the Excel Center. Now, that being said, the Excel Center is an economic driver. It does bring in people from the region, from out of state, to come to events in downtown Hartford, which helps support our restaurants and our bars and our other small businesses. But I think we really need to prioritize exactly what it is we're going to spend very limited capital dollars on. I know there was, it was coincidental that there was a mention of the New York Islanders potentially being asked to come here. I don't think any of our decisions should be based on whether a professional team is going to come here or not. What we need to do is just look at the condition of the Excel Center, try to determine exactly what's going to give us the best economic value for that level of investment, and then go from there.
State Representative Jason Rojas from the 9th District. Jason, thanks very much for spending some time with us. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk again down the road.
Thank you. Look forward to it.
Take care.